a spare, expressive antidote to bombastic symphonic 19th century excess, the five pieces needed individual titles, a sense of a story, to make them more saleable. Ultimately engraved with its own distinctive programmatic narrative shape, The Planet was clearly about something, in many ways the whole story of life itself, on the threshold of the supernatural. It would become, for better or worse, a big influence on the idea of the prog rock concept album, with its own bloated, self-involved aesthetic that needed puncturing by punk rock. And since astrology is interpreted as being the movement and relative position of celestial bodies having an influence on the course of natural earthly occurrences and human affairs, Holst's The Planets actually did have an impact on musical human affairs, if you can call Emerson, Lake and Palmer human. Eventually, after a few years of indifference to playing something classical on my own record player, The Planets ended up being the first classical album I ever bought. Perhaps I finally made the move because of hearing the Mighty Mars fit perfectly, like a skewed, supersonic slab of glam, as the show business introduction to a Mott the Hoople concert in 1973. Just like Elvis used to use Also Sprach Zarathustra to set up a barrage of swaggering, glittery rock and roll. A youthful Queen were Mott's support group, and Holst's Mars perhaps taught them a lot about the pumping attractions of melodrama. Or maybe I wanted The Planets because there it was, looking like it belonged with books about robots and time travel by Philip K. Dick and Isaac Asimov, on the bargain-priced, handily available in Woolworth's Classics for Pleasure label. Cheap music was especially seductive to an underfunded provincial teenager, if it looked like it came from space. Hearing it as a record, James Loughran conducting the Manchester Halley Orchestra, was a huge disappointment. It sounded like it came from a chilly village hall. Perhaps it was the feeble budget quality, perhaps because of the huge, hammy-sounding orchestra squashed through my tinny little bedroom speakers. But next to Iggy and the Stooges, Faust or Ornette Coleman, it sounded frail and pompous, and to my mind, which was much narrower than I thought, deeply conservative. Whatever timeless, carefully organised, esoteric, mystical elements Holst had scrupulously pressed into the piece seemed to me buried under puffed-up fuss and curlicue. And unlike the music of Ligeti and even Strauss, which had been sent by director Stanley Kubrick into an hallucinatory, post-human 2001 Space Odyssey cosmos, along with speaking computer HAL and the godlike Star Child, The Planet seemed embedded in a decaying 1920s. The cover promised space age, as though the music would swirl out of the pulsating machines of the pioneering underground German electronic group Tangerine Dream that I loved at the time. But the music seemed trapped in the age of steam, fit only for gloomy establishment rituals. The experience even put me off to Meter's later jaunty electro-pop transformation of the suite into a fantasy journey through space, closer in spirit to Tangerine Dream and Kraftwerk, if also Liberace, a kinky blurring of kitsch, pomp and vaulting synths that does make you realise how The Planets has the Shakespearean quality of being open to endless interpretation, from the camp to the spectacular, the down-to-earth to the gravity-defying. In the 1970s, it already sounded like a cliché, because of all the things that had influenced it and that it had influenced. Even more so by 1977, when John Williams unashamedly ladled its techniques and drama into the anthems and music of Star Wars. It was then that its impact on blockbuster soundtracks really picked up speed, and you would have to separate it from all the plagiarizing parodies, copies and tributes to ever get inside its awesome, technically stunning architecture. 40 years later, I am now at one with the planets, as an intrepid evocation of an evolving universe. And I visit it regularly, becoming more familiar with different versions, different conductors and orchestras giving it their attitude, their take. Like it really is a Macbeth, Hamlet or King Lear, the story of rebirth, of clairvoyance, this setting of the imagination against the backdrop of space and infinity, open to a multitude of readings. Previn, Stokowski, Sargent, Herman, Bernstein, Susskind, Karajan, and Bolt's belting 1945 version from Abbey Road Studios. All of them orbiting an idea of what Holst's own planet sounded like in his mind, exploiting the imagined personalities of the seven planets to make an overall comment on the one planet that was not directly featured, Earth. I have found a way to get through the forbidden gates that once separated me from the icy, intimidating classical land beyond. I have located the correct paperwork. Or perhaps it's just my age. I have inevitably made the cliched late-life move from pop to classical. Where pop is about the setting up of life, the facing forward, being psyched up and ready for action. And classical is about the settling down, the closing in on the idea of death and what is beyond that. Classical music when you are young can seem all about death, being mostly written by the long dead and filled with quiet, comfortless dread, and not something you wish to engage with. But as you get older and find your way around this elaborate other land, you appreciate that it is more about the astonishing privilege of being alive on the astonishing verge of not being. And I now know enough to understand how Holst's channeling through the planet's grandiose, romantic and warrior forces of Debussy, of Berlioz and Dvorak's then fresh techniques of orchestral colouring and evocative phrasing, of the primal yearnings of Scriabin and Stravinsky, of Schoenberg's tonality testing post-Mahler and Wagner modernism, produced the definitive template for blockbuster movie soundtracks. Holst's imaginative compression of these turbulent influences into the planet's tone poems resulted in the anthemic extravagance and manipulative amplification of mood and emotion that flowed into John Williams' Indiana Jones, Han Solo and Harry Potter, Hans Zimmer's Gladiator, into Mad Max, Terminator and The Lord of the Rings. In a way, all this exuberant escapist force, music is enchanting, distracting special effect, is rooted in the interests of Holst in the occult, in magic and the paranormal, and in what disciple Ralph Vaughan Williams described after hearing The Planets as the perfect equilibrium of the mystic and melodic sides of the composer's nature. I now also appreciate how Holst, more experimental, eclectic and intellectually curious than it seemed after my upsetting Classics for Pleasure misstep, helped usher in unusual new sound worlds. And he illuminated paths for the otherworldly Britain, visionary Tippett and bleak Bert Whistle. It is King Crimson and Zappa that can now sound quaint and dated next to a great, driven orchestra piling into the planets. Heavy metal sounds docile next to Holst's use of an orchestra to stretch the imagination and gloriously generate accelerating suspense. Pop sounds like yesterday, not as dynamically immediate as it was from the 50s to the 90s, where it was in the right time and the right place, responding to and helping create the world around it. It has become the status quo. I rejected classical music because I thought it was old-fashioned and out of date. It occurs to me now it was probably too modern and too filled with submerged dialectical thought, its spiralling power buried deep below the surface. The planet sounds more and more like now. And its context is all of space, other forms of time, dimension and existence, not just the 20s, 30s or 40s. It sounds massive and vigorous, chaos in spectacular harmony, its rhythms intensifying expectation and always building towards the future, which it saw into and beyond, believing in music as a kind of alchemy that helps us cope with the relentless crises of everyday life, diagnoses our fate, and protects us from the demons and perils always out there.
That was Paul Morley on Finally Seeing the Future in Holst's The Planets. It was produced by Justine Willett. A very warm welcome to the Royal Albert Hall if you've just joined us. From me, Susie Klein. Still to come in this evening's live prom from the BBC Symphony Orchestra and conductor Edward Gardner, we have Holst's suite, The Planets. And for me, it is just one of those pieces that grabs your imagination when you are young and will not let it go. I think, whatever Paul Morley's doubts were, it is the perfect entry into the world of the symphony orchestra and the viscerally exciting sound that that can produce. Well, here's what tonight's conductor remembers about first encountering the piece.
Oh, I heard it all the time as a kid. I had a record of The Planets when I was growing up, but it's amazing. And it's not all about Mars, which is what I think you think when you're a child, but the soothing movements I find more and more extraordinary. And I think of Venus and Saturn, you know, the bringer of peace, and then this portrayal of old age and eventually a most amazing repose. And you wouldn't say in Holst's hands it was religious, because he had a very complicated relationship with spirituality, I think, but it's ethereal and it's music of incredible calm, actually.
Edward Gardner. Well, it was Ralph Vaughan Williams who famously described this piece as the perfect equilibrium of the mystic and the melodic. Holst was a composer who loved to study things and allowed them to seep into his imagination and inspire him. Earlier tonight, we heard the results of his reading Thomas Hardy. And in this case, it was looking up to the stars that suggested to him a huge suite for orchestra and female chorus. Before The Planets, Holst had been a composer who was used to writing small works, often for commission. This suite was his chance to create music of enormous scope and scale. 7-tone poems, each one a portrait of a different planet, requiring vast orchestral and vocal forces. But how to pull that off in a performance somewhere as imposing as the Royal Albert Hall? Is there a danger of sonic overload? Edward Gardner again.
My experience of the Albert Hall is that contrasts and extremes and variety tell in the hall almost better than anywhere else. And this piece has some of the loudest quadruple fortes and some of the smallest, the most delicate moments in music making as well. So I think the hall is perfect for it.
Edward Gardner there. Well, with the exception of Earth and Pluto, each planet in our solar system has its own movement in Holst's suite. Might interest you to know that Pluto was recently declassified as a planet. It was officially discovered in 1930 and then in 2006 robbed of its crown, the International Astronomical Union deciding that it was merely a dwarf planet. So poor old Pluto. Still, Holst's suite went back from being one planet short for a few decades to absolutely present and correct. So not all bad then. So here comes Edward Gardner returning to the platform of the Royal Albert Hall to conduct the BBC Symphony Orchestra in Holst's suite, The Planets.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Holst Suite, his collection of seven-tone poems, The Planets, live from the Royal Albert Hall, part of the 2013 BBC Proms. Edward Gardner conducting the BBC Symphony Orchestra, led tonight by Simon Blendis. And offstage, that wonderfully atmospheric, wordless, six-part female chorus we heard there, the women of the BBC Symphony Chorus, their chorus master, Stephen Jackson. Well, the power of that work as a gateway for new listeners of orchestral music, I think it's still so potent. A lot of younger members of the audience here tonight, teenagers in the crowd, I've seen parents with young children, there's a little girl to my left, you can't be more than 7 or 8, with a little brother who's about 4. The two of them didn't move a muscle for the last 50 minutes. Edward Gardner bringing to their feet the brass section of the BBC Symphony Orchestra, and now the winds, oboes and bassoons. The horns having their moment in the limelight, and now harps. The timps didn't do badly either, and the percussion. But really, hearing that piece, I remember as a teenager, the sheer force of that hitting me, that blast of a symphony orchestra at full pelt, there is simply nothing like it. Such a great showcase for this orchestra, the BBC Symphony Orchestra, the home band, after all, the house band of the BBC Proms, and this, their fifth prom of the season. They opened the first night, they closed with the last night, much more in between. Well, that concludes tonight's concert here at the Royal Albert Hall. Don't forget that, as always, you can hear it again via the iPlayer. Every prom broadcast live here on Radio 3. We'll be back tomorrow. Pianist Mitsuko Uchida returning to the proms after an absence of almost 20 years. She'll be playing Beethoven's Fourth Concerto. Marit Janssen's Bavarian Radio Symphony Orchestra joining her. So do join us for that. 7 o'clock tomorrow night here on BBC Radio 3. But right now, time to hand you back to Broadcasting House and Jonathan Swain.
Susie, thank you very much. Susie Klein there at the Royal Albert Hall. And as she was saying, there'll be another chance to hear tonight's prom here on BBC Radio 3 on Friday afternoon at 2 o'clock. And of course, if you want to listen to it when you want to listen to it, every prom's available to listen to online via the Radio 3 website anytime you like for 7 days from the broadcast. Well, in a little under 15 minutes tonight, we're back at the Royal Albert Hall, the Elgar Room of the Hall, for a Proms Plus Late Jazz session with the Sam Watts Quintet and the poet Amy Blakemore. And that's followed on by one of the current roster of Radio 3's new generation artists, mezzo Jennifer Johnston, who's appearing at the Proms this year in Sunday's Beethoven Ninth Symphony, for example. This evening, Jennifer in songs by Holst's friend Vaughan Williams. That'll be at 10:30 or thereabouts. Well, two proms tomorrow night. Susie mentioned the first of them. Marit Janssen's conducting the Bavarian Radio Symphony Orchestra in the Berlioz Symphonie Fantastique and with pianist Mitsuko Uchida in Beethoven's Fourth Piano Concerto. 7 o'clock start for that. And then Nigel Kennedy takes to the Albert Hall stage for the late prom tomorrow night. Nigel Kennedy directing the Palestine Strings and the Orchestra of Life in his latest thoughts on Vivaldi's The Four Seasons, including a few improvised links between the four concertos. That's here on Radio 3 from 10:15 tomorrow night. For the moment, another concerto from the same Vivaldi collection as The Four Seasons. In fact, it follows on from the seasons in the collection, in number anyway. Vivaldi subtitled it La Tempesta di Mare, and it's not, as the seasons mostly are, a descriptive sequence of events, but that hasn't stopped writers speculating that the calm middle movement is the eye of the storm, or even a lament of castaways. Gottfried von der Goltz is the solo violinist here and director of the Freiburg Baroque Orchestra. Gottfried von der Goltz was the solo violinist there and director of the Freiburg Baroque Orchestra in Vivaldi's Concerto in F Major RV253, subtitled La Tempesta di Mare, nothing to do with Shakespeare's The Tempest. It's number 5 of the Vivaldi Opus 8 collection, which the first 4 concertos are the 4 seasons. And you can hear those from Nigel Kennedy and friends tomorrow night at the Proms. Kennedy's Spring Takes Wing, live from the Royal Albert Hall here on Radio 3 at 10:15 tomorrow night. From Venetian Storms to the music of Englishman Richard Rodney Bennett, who died on Christmas Eve last year, this is his setting of A Good Night. It's his contribution to A Garland for Linda, a collaborative series of works written in memory of Linda McCartney in 1999. The BBC singers are conducted by Paul Brough. A tribute to Linda McCartney. Richard Rodney Bennett's A Good Night with Paul Brough there conducting the BBC singers. A few words now from Ian McMillan.
I'm here to tell you there's still time to enter this year's Proms Poetry Competition. All you have to do is write a poem inspired by any piece of music in this year's Proms season. There are 2 categories, one for children and one for adults. And the winners will have their poems read out at a Proms Plus event and then broadcast on Radio 3. Oh, and they'll also get to meet me, which is a prize in itself. For details of how to enter, including full terms and conditions, visit bbc.co.uk/proms or simply type Proms Poetry Competition into your search engine. The closing date is the 9th of August, so get writing. And I personally would love to get poems from people who've never written a poem before. Go on, have a go. Now, what rhymes with Benjamin Britten?
BBC Radio 3, it's a little after 10 past 10, and time now for Georgia Mann to introduce another of our Proms Plus late sessions, recorded last week at the Royal Albert Hall's Elgar Room.
Hello and welcome to tonight's Proms Plus Late, where poetry and music come together alongside the gleaming red piano and under the moody, bluey, pink lights of the Elgar Room upstairs at the Royal Albert Hall. It was Allen Ginsberg who first wrote about floating across the tops of cities contemplating jazz. And the jazz that we'll be contemplating tonight will be brought to you by the Sam Watts Quintet, with Sam at the aforementioned ruby red piano. At the ripe old age of 24, Sam's already played everywhere from the Wigmore Hall to the Symphony Hall in Birmingham. He's also a pianist in residence at the legendary Savoy Hotel in London. And appropriately, he cites a cocktail of influences. We've got everything in there from tango to silent movie soundtracks to Brazilian choro music. And the band tonight are made up of real all-stars who are kind of Sam's fellow alumni from the Royal Academy of Music. And there's also a Berklee College of Music grad. He's the one holding the guitar. And our poet this evening is Amy Blakemore, who started writing poetry after coming across our very own poet laureate, Carol Ann Duffy's work. Yes, you're cringing now, Amy. During her GCSE. And it actually got her to thinking, this poetry writing lark is actually not that hard. I'll give it a go. And obviously, her initial assessment was correct, because she has since gone on to be cited as one of the rising stars in British poetry by The Guardian. Her work's been anthologised in Blood Axe's 21 Poets for the 21st Century, and she's also read her work at the Latitude Festival. And we'll be hearing Amy in action very soon. But first, it is the Sam Watts Quintet. We have Sam Watts on piano, Thomas Seminar Ford on guitar, Lucia Capellaro on cello, Flo Moore on bass, and Ben Brown on drums.
Thank you.
We have an exclusive collaboration, and Sam and Thomas on guitar are going to be sort of improvising beautifully and dexterously beneath Amy as she reads her poem, Charlie.
A séance with a true spirit of romance. Byron, perhaps, one club foot in the grave, his ripped woolen sodden with earth and syphilis. Our gods turn away. They will not accept your noontide sacrifice of quail's eggs and soda bread. This is what you wanted all along. Eros stink, the darkness of the forest by the motorway. To be high as lilacs on our college walls. And with hell scrawled on bare chest to writhe like frost round the railings at night. Starving for abandonment, a dress all torn to waif by apple moths. Eat mummy powders for the ache of what it is, our head shaved to tatters. Pretend it is midnight and we are in a meadow. I turn it into songs to pass Saharan numbing time. Before you are an old and wet-lipped man. Until then, it is always Thursday, and we have no plan. And so that youth might thoroughly be thought true paradise, let us carry age, gnarled snake, in us all. Thank you.
Thank you. Service, Corporate Replacement Service. Blithe on the axis of snowburst, fur coat, cigarette smoke, archway turned muscovite with seagull puff and sleaze, my markless boy, asking who drags this sudden knife of white, who planned this intrusion of the world beyond the given. This one's new, it doesn't have a title. Maybe it will never have a title. So there. I will hunt you in the mountains, my sweet sideways child, with your nipples fun and obvious, your residential legs. Are you in the baby's bedroom or orchestrating a storm at sea? Don't talk. I don't want your roadkill opinions, the convictions that you suppose are strange and beautiful. It is your eyes that kill me, those stars raked up from hell. Thank you.
Fantastic. Amy Blakemore, thank you very much, Amy. Thank you.